This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yezu Heap. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This morning everybody was basically still sticking to the latest from the Election Commission that the election would be held on the 30th of December. And then all of a sudden there is that communique saying that there are three cities in which the election would be delayed until March.
That's VOA reporter Abdurrahman Dia talking about the latest development in the DRC's election chaos. Details coming up.
Also, as the protests over rising prices and the declining economy spread in Sudan, the government blocks social media. Zimbabwe's strike gets worse as the government suspends hundreds of doctors, and former Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak testifies against his successor, Mohamed Morsi.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
The already delayed elections in the DRC took another hit today when the government announced that some voting will be postponed until March. A week late already, the balloting is still scheduled for Sunday in the capital, Kinshasa, and most of the country. The new delay affects two cities in the east due to the ongoing Ebola outbreak and one in the west due to local conflict. The delays are fueling questions about whether President Joseph Kabila will keep his promise of a peaceful handover of power after 17 years. He was supposed to do that 2 years ago, but postponed voting each of the last 2 years. The current election schedule has been delayed by a fire that destroyed most of the voting machines for Kinshasa. VOA reporter Abdurrahman Dia is in Kinshasa, and he spoke with my colleague Paul Alexander.
This morning, everybody was basically still sticking to the latest from the Election Commission that the election would be held on the 30th of December. And then all of a sudden there is that communique saying that there are three cities, two in the eastern part of the country and one in the west, in which the election would be delayed until March. However, the Electoral Commission is still saying that the new president will be sworn in January 18, which means that these three cities, which represent about 1,250,000 voters, will not be electing the next president. So a major surprise for a lot of people here. But someone like Martin Fayulu, one of the main opposition candidates, doesn't seem to be surprised, because before that he tweeted that he would not accept any delay for those three cities. They are not explaining how it's going to work, and clearly their vote will not count, because they already have a new president if they stick to this calendar that they just confirmed today. And if you remember last week, the president of this election commission, Corneille Nangaa, said that they did not want to go ahead with the election without Kinshasa, because of the fire that destroyed 8,000 voting machines for Kinshasa. But now, obviously, it looks like at least that the DRC is going to the election without three major cities, 1,250,000 voters.
Now, most of these are in the east, where there's the Ebola outbreak and the ongoing conflict. And I assume that is the reason that they are delaying this?
That's what they're saying. But at the same time, a lot of people are saying they didn't have a problem letting the candidates campaign there, because a lot of candidates have been campaigning in Beni and Mutembo and Yumbi, and they did not have a problem with that. So when did it become a problem all of a sudden? That is the kind of discussion that people are having here, and really suspecting that basically they just don't want to have a free and fair election. And yesterday, eight candidates for the presidency have came out with a press release basically accusing CENI, the election commission, of preparing a chaotic election in order to favor the presidential candidate of the ruling party.
What was the reason given for delaying in the western city?
In the city of Yumbi in the west, there have been inter-community violence recently, and there was some electoral material that have been destroyed, in fact, but there have been some violence there.
So how was Christmas in Kinshasa amid all this election confusion?
It was pretty quiet. It was also very political because the Archbishop of Kinshasa, Monsignor Ambongo, did celebrate and reminding the Electoral Commission that December 30th would be, the date for the election, and that the election should not be delayed. And he called on people to go and vote their conscience.
That was VOA journalist Abdourahmane Dia in Kinshasa speaking with my colleague Paul Alexander.
As the protests, over rising prices and the declining economy spread in Sudan, the government has blocked social media. Many people say they are unable to communicate with their loved ones in Facebook, Twitter, and WhatsApp inside or outside the country. Political activist Mohamed Farouk Silman told VOA reporter Michael Atiti in Khartoum that the government's decision is a human rights violation. Others say it hampers business. Al-Nazir Abdul Ghassim Kuku, a businessman at Al Arabiya Main Market, orders some of his goods online from overseas, and he now cannot communicate with his clients and supplies. Thousands of Sudanese protesters demonstrated yesterday against high prices for basic needs like bread and fuel. Many are calling on President Omar al-Bashir to step down. At least 12 protesters have been killed and dozens more injured since the protests began more than 2 weeks ago.
Zimbabwe's doctor strike is worse after a court recently ruled that the industrial action by junior doctors is illegal and issued an ultimatum for them to return to work. The government has since suspended hundreds of doctors. Reporter Kutsai Zvinavashi in Harare has more.
It is day 26 since the junior doctors went on strike. Dr. Mtabisi Bebe is the Secretary General of Zimbabwe Hospitals Doctors Association. He explains how the negotiations with the government have been.
We have been receiving conflicting messages. On one end, the employer seems to be displaying a negotiation attitude. And on the other end, we are being dragged into court, and some of our members have been suspended. So as such, the negotiation has really remained stagnant, so to speak.
Pepe says around 550 doctors have been suspended, although their lawyers urged the court that the strike is lawful. Pepe says doctors felt it was unfair to return to work without their grievances being addressed. Doctors want the government to stock adequate medicine and functional equipment in hospitals and clinics and review their pay to move toward increasing salaries. State media reported that Vice President Constantino Chiwenga was going to lead the negotiations with doctors, but Pepe says that has not yet happened. Pepe describes Christmas for most doctors.
It was very, very, very sad. Very sad. We didn't even have a cent to buy a drink or something. And at the same time, we're very psychologically stressed. Our members have been suspended. The healthcare delivery system is in shambles.
Doctors want to be paid in US dollars, as the local electronic currency they usually get paid through is losing value against the dollar. Pepe says the suspension of hundreds of doctors has worsened the situation.
And the issue that they suspended about 553 of our members has actually escalated the healthcare crisis, in the sense that you'll see that even provincial and district hospitals have already embarked on industrial action. So as I'm speaking, the situation is just getting worse and worse each and every day.
The Minister of Information said on Twitter the government has released some funds to stock medicine and equipment in hospitals. But it said it could not pay doctors in dollars as the little foreign currency it gets is directed towards critical sectors. Pepe says it is worrying that they hear of new developments regarding their strike through the media. As the festive season progresses, in a sombre tone, most Zimbabweans cannot afford to fall ill because the strikes mean hospitals have become places where patients go to die or get worse. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinavashe from Harare.
In an incident with echoes of the start of Tunisia's revolution and the Arab Spring, protests have quickly spread around the country after a 32-year-old journalist set himself on fire. Abderzaki Zorgi said in a video statement that he was setting himself ablaze in the city of Kasserine on behalf of the people suffering from hunger and other issues due to the country's economic decline. The incident was followed by 2 days of protests that police used tear gas to break up. The Interior Ministry says 6 members of the security forces were injured and 9 protesters were detained. Citing police harassment, a street vendor in Kasserine set himself on fire in 2010. That led to protests which paved the way for Tunisia's democratic transition. But the country is still plagued by inflation, currency devaluation, and high unemployment.
A 66-year-old American citizen of Libyan origin has been arrested and charged with murder over a circumcision that caused the death of a 2-year-old Nigerian boy in Monte Rotondo, a province of Rome. The dead boy's twin brother is seriously ill and still in the hospital after undergoing a circumcision as well. The circumcisions occurred last weekend in the home of a family who migrated to Italy from Nigeria. Around 5,000 circumcisions are performed in Italy each year, with about 35% of them done illegally. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with me about the incident and about the increase in the number of illegal circumcisions in Italy.
Well, a young 2-year-old toddler has died, and his twin brother has been taken to a Rome hospital after a botched circumcision that was conducted at home in a small town on the outskirts of Rome. Now, Italian police and prosecutors have opened a murder investigation, and the doctor who is alleged to have carried out this circumcision has been arrested and taken into custody. But the little boy died of severe blood loss on Saturday when this procedure went terribly wrong. And the two children have been born in Italy to a woman of Nigerian origin who is believed to have sought asylum in Italy.
Where is the doctor from?
We understand that the doctor is actually an American citizen of Libyan origin. At first, Italian media were suggesting that he was Nigerian, but the latest reports say that he is an American of Libyan origin. He's 66 years old, and he is being interrogated and has been arrested by police and prosecutors who are trying to get to the bottom of what happened. Now, we haven't had an update on the second boy, but I understand he's in a stable condition in one of Rome's major hospitals, and his condition is said to be improving. Interestingly, around 5,000 circumcisions are performed in Italy every year, and of those, 1/3 are believed being done illegally, and so there's great concern about these circumcisions that are happening in the home instead of in a hospital or in a clinic.
Are these illegal circumcisions being done in the home of migrants?
Often the circumcisions are being carried out in Muslim homes. We know that they're considered to be a tradition in the Muslim faith and in the Jewish faith. So often they're being conducted in homes, and there are concerns about that. There are an estimated 1.7 million Muslims in Italy. Some from the community estimate that of that number, around 3% carry out circumcisions. So there has been a concern also expressed by foreign doctors, an association that represents foreign doctors, saying that these should be carried out with the support of the health ministry, that they should be conducted in public and private health institutions and offered at affordable prices, because this is a tradition in the community. 35% are being carried out in a clandestine manner, and there's a concern about protecting children, particularly after hearing of this case that went terribly wrong at the weekend.
I'm sure the parents are very devastated with the loss of their child and the other one being in the hospital. Have they made any public statements?
We haven't had any recent updates, but it seems that the death of this Nigerian child in the town of Monte Rotondo has really concerned the community. As you can imagine, people are shocked to hear about this death. It took place in a home that was being offered to the migrant family, a home that's being offered by a local migrant support organization in conjunction with the community. And the mayor of the town said this was such an absurd tragedy that took place, and that nobody outside this family should be allowed to enter the building inside these apartments that are being offered to migrants by the community. Now, the mayor said that the mother took this initiative without telling anyone. Otherwise, it would simply not have been at all allowed in that community. So people are really shaken and shocked, particularly because this occurred in the week before Christmas.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 21 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The government has announced that some of the voting in the DRC will be postponed until March. As the protests over rising prices and the declining economy spread in Sudan, the government has blocked social media. And Zimbabwe's doctors' strike has gotten worse as the government suspends hundreds of doctors. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Islamic State militants claim responsibility for Sunday's suicide attack on the Libyan foreign ministry in Tripoli. At least three people died in the attack. More than 20 people were injured. It began with a car bomb near the ministry. After security forces rushed to the scene, a suicide bomber blew himself inside the building and another attacker died when a bomb he was carrying exploded. Security forces report killing a third attacker. Libya has been racked by violence since the 2011 uprising that ousted former leader Muammar Gaddafi. The government is divided between two competing administrations holding different parts of the country. The UN is organizing a national dialogue in the coming weeks to develop a plan for uniting and stabilizing the country.
Sub-Saharan Africa remains the source of a significant part of illegal migration from Libya to Italy and Spain. In Italy, the top countries of origin are Tunisia, Eritrea, Sudan, and Nigeria. In Spain, the illegal migrants come across the Mediterranean from Guinea, Morocco, Mali, and Ivory Coast. Wendy Williams is a research fellow at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington. She discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi the main reasons for the continuous flow of African migration to Europe and what could be done to stem it.
It's easy to see why forcibly displaced people are leaving their countries, people who are fleeing violence and conflict. But the economic migrants, they are fleeing poverty and poor governance, weak, corrupt, and repressive governance. The migrants that we're seeing that are going to Europe, a lot of them were migrants that were migrating to the North African countries for work anyway. That is a long-established circular migration that happens. They were destination countries, particularly Libya. So a lot of the people who were in Libya found themselves trapped during the collapse and the civil war that's been going on, and they have tried to flee that. So they are actually fleeing the conflict itself, the increased violence, and then, of course, as we've seen reported about Libya, a lot of migrants are being sold into slavery. There's trafficking going on. It's pretty dangerous time for a person to be a migrant in Libya. And so they're fleeing to Europe to solve that problem. Now, there are also still plenty of migrants who appear to be coming up through the Sahel towards Libya, despite this information and that it's not particularly safe in Libya.
U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton said that in fiscal year 2017, the United States provided $8.7 billion in development, security, and food assistance to Africa. How would you explain the continued flow of African immigrants escaping poverty and lack of economic opportunity in their home countries?
Economic migrants are also indirect victims of the violence and political repression of some governments. And then they're also a victim of corruption, which is a big problem in a lot of the countries in Africa where there is weak governance. And they are merely trying to survive. Take Niger, for example, where you have perhaps herders who are trying to keep up a family livelihood or herding their stock. But the environment is becoming more hostile to where they used to roam. The grass and vegetation isn't as abundant. They then find themselves going into regions where there are farmers, and then there's conflict there. There is no government presence to help ameliorate the conflict between the groups. And young individuals are thinking, I've got a family to feed. I can't continue with this kind of lifestyle. And so I'm going to go to the next country and see and try my luck.
What should be done to prevent illegal migration from Africa to Europe?
One of the ways to prevent illegal migration is to invest in legal migration. What we call these individuals who are going illegally, it merely means that they don't have the proper documentation, they don't have a visa to enter the country and to be recognized under its laws. And that hurts both those individuals who go into the country to work, but it also hurts the countries from which these individuals come because they don't receive then the remittances back. And in a lot of cases, there are countries that have unofficial relationships, and there are plenty of Ethiopians who travel to the Gulf states to work. And what would be good to protect, give their citizen status when in order to enter the country so that they get the proper visa, so that they are recognized under the law, so they are protected and then are able to be paid by their employers, pay taxes, and send home remittances. So it's a win-win for everybody involved.
That was Wendy Williams, a research fellow at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies. She spoke to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi.
Former Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak today testified against his successor, Mohamed Morsi, in Morsi's trial for a jailbreak by thousands of members of the Muslim Brotherhood during the 2011 Arab Spring uprising. Morsi was elected president after Mubarak was forced from office during the uprising. Morsi, an Islamist, was then ousted in 2013 in a military coup led by the current president Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. During his testimony today in Cairo, Mubarak declined to answer some questions, saying he needed permission from the current president because of national security concerns.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to Straight Talk Africa coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Skip Sisk, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, general elections are coming up in the Democratic Republic of Congo on December 23rd to determine a successor to President Joseph Kabila. An in-depth discussion on what's at stake in DRC's elections on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at